This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. Today on the program, once again, we have Dr. Nikki Martinez, who has been working as an independent medical expert to assist the courts for the past decade. Dr. Martinez has been an adjunct professor for nearly 14 years, engaging in domestic and international consulting for various individuals, groups, and organizations, as well as continues to see a small caseload of individual and couples clients through telemental health services. Her large catalog of articles for the Huffington Post and EverydayPower.com can be seen in the show notes from her work as a contributor for both publications. And today's topic is, it's not the medication, it's the motivation. And Dr. Martinez, great to have you back on the program.
Oh, it's so good to be back. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Always great to have you. Looking forward to hearing from you today on today's topic especially. So to kick things off as the topic of the show notes, there is an important misunderstanding about the fact that pre-existing suicidal thoughts cause suicidal behavior in individuals, not mental health medications. Explain what the misunderstanding is here. I'm sure there's some good information here to kind of set folks straight on this.
Yes. The misunderstanding is that, and there's a bunch to tease out here, but to first explain the initial part of it. When somebody starts medication, and this is, it's most common in teens, but it's explained to them, and I've come across young adults and teens, they tell both the teens and the parents when they start a mental health medication that the medication may increase suicidal thoughts. And so the individual, what's actually going on is that the individual had pre-existing suicidal thoughts, but they are not asked that question, or the teen is, or the young adult is not telling the parent that they have pre-existing suicidal thoughts. In individual, we all have a baseline, and that's where the medication is supposed to be getting you up to. When we think of like a horizon line or a water line, the individual is so depressed and they have these pre-existing suicidal thoughts that they don't have the motivation to act on the plan. As the medication starts to work just a little bit, it's lifting you up towards the baseline. And now with just that little bit of motivation, the individual can now act on the plan. If it had been explained that the medication is giving them the motivation to act because it gives them a little bit of energy, it's lifting them towards baseline. If the individual had been asked, do you have suicidal thoughts? And they had told them, and they had also told them, if we think back to when we were teenagers and everything seemed forever, nothing is ever going to end, I'm always going to feel like this. That's what they think about their suicidal thoughts. That's what they think about their depression. They think it is always going to be like this. They also don't think about this very brief window of time that I'm going to get to baseline, because it takes roughly for a starter dose, between four, 6 to 8 weeks, depending on the medication, for an individual to get to baseline. If we think about the longest window of that time, if we tell them it's going to be 8 weeks, that is a finite point. An individual can see an end point. They can see hope. They can see that if I can just make it to that point, there's an end. Anyone that I've ever talked to says intellectually, if they had known that, that would have been a completely different situation for them versus this is never going to end. So if they had understood that there was hope at the end of this, that this is what was causing this, then there would have been a completely different situation. And also another problem is that either they stop taking the medication, they act on these thoughts now, or the parents take them off of the medication. There is, in the show notes, in case anybody wants to look, an article, this is based from the Mayo Clinic, but I'll let people know, the FDA only approves 9 medications for adolescents, but they have put what is called a black box warning on all antidepressants for youth. And this was based on the fact that there was a study, and they had noted, compared to a placebo, a sugar pill, they believe there was a slight increase in these thoughts in youth, except that is not teased apart well. They advise doctors to prescribe the smallest amount of any medication possible to help reduce these risks, or of any accidental overdose. And really, it's a good idea when any child is starting a type of medication to have a lockbox or put it away and give it to the youth as they're getting used to the medication. But also, as we'll get into in the next question that we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about some of the different issues that can be triggered, and if there is ever a situation, why. And it's not actually the depression that's triggering those within the family. Also, the Mayo Clinic talks about the fact that exactly what I'm saying, that from the first 2 to typically 6 weeks, but up to 8, you should closely monitor the youth that's taking it so that you can monitor any change in their symptomology and behavior, because it's actually going to be these other issues that are going on that they're having a reaction to. And they note that the highest risk for suicidal thinking and behavior, if you're going to see these pre-existing issues pop up, is going to be during the first few months, which is the 6 to 8 weeks of taking the antidepressant, when the doses is increased or decreased, and that the parent or caregiver should closely observe them on a daily basis and make sure that they're taking the medication. And that's actually important too, because they want to make sure that they're not having a reaction because they're actually not taking the medication, and that the parent or the guardian thinks they are, and really that they're actually having a reaction too because they're not taking the medication. And that things that they might see, signs and symptoms that they would notice in terms of consideration for self-harm, would be talk of suicide or dying, an attempt, self-injury, such as cutting, behavior, agitation and restlessness, new or worsening, and this is important because this will tie into the next point, for the next question, new or worsening anxiety or panic attacks, irritability, increasing sadness, impulsivity, increased energy or talking, aggression, trouble sleeping, excessive spending, and then you would want to contact their doctor and let them know that you're seeing these sorts of behaviors. But don't make sure to not stop the antidepressant until you speak with the doctor and tell them what is going on at that point. And then it may be as simple as a tweak in the medication, and then or them starting a conjunctive cognitive behavioral therapy or interpersonal therapy. And all research that has ever been done has shown that a combination of medication management and therapy is the best treatment option together, not just one or the other.
Really do appreciate the full response and full coverage there. That is most helpful for sure. Now, you note that it is also essential that a child has a thorough evaluation before starting an antidepressant by a trained professional. Who should conduct it, and what should it entail, and why is it so important?
Yes, it is essential that the teen have a thorough evaluation before they start a medication. And this should be conducted by either a psychiatrist, an MD who has had specialized training during their medical training, specifically in psychiatry or psychology. The standard they typically do is a semester in psychiatry, so you want to make sure that it is somebody who has had experience in that. But they need to not just go to the PCP and get prescribed a medication, because they also, what I was talking about with that it's not the depression that's triggering those. If they have pre-existing suicidal thoughts, that needs to be addressed. And a lot of the time that is an uncomfortable question for the parents or the primary care physician to ask, and that's where we run into a problem. They need to be thoroughly assessed and have an evaluation before they start taking the antidepressant by the psychiatrist or pediatrician with a background in working with specifically youth and children. And they need to be assessed for both the mood disorder, but they also, the detailed evaluation also needs to look at whether they have a propensity in an increase for self-harm. They need to see if they have other mental health issues, such as attention deficit disorder, substance abuse issues, potentially bipolar disorder, an anxiety disorder, or an eating disorder. These specifically put them at an increased risk for suicidality. If they put them on a medication for any of these issues, that there are different types and different classes of medications for depression. One of them specifically is an example. There are what are called SSRIs and SNRIs. SNRIs they have a component in them that is excitatory. And so if someone has anxiety as well, It makes them exceptionally anxious. And so it is the wrong medication for somebody if they have depression and anxiety. And that can be what makes somebody like irritable, anxious. If somebody has pre-existing suicidal thoughts, that can be just what tips them over the edge. And so this evaluation is so key to suss out the individual, because they can be at a very fragile tipping point.
Really do appreciate the information shared on this. I know it's a sensitive topic, but really do appreciate your expertise on this. Now, the FDA has put a black box warning on all antidepressants, but has only approved 9 for children and youth. And you've also had some research that you would like to discuss that shows that it is not these medications that cause suicidal thoughts. So get into that a little bit, if you would.
That's correct. And I have also, you'll put, and we provided the links to all of the research in the show notes, but I'm going to go over it here so that people can sort of have a Cliff Notes version of it. The University of Chicago and Harvard Data Science Review did a really extensive study that looked at all of this, and they reviewed 922 prescription medications taken by almost 150 million people over an 11-year period. And it shows that there are just 10 drugs that were associated with increased rates of suicide attempts. 44 of these drugs were linked to a decrease in suicide attempts, including many that carry the black box warnings, actually, by the FDA, and were previously allegedly associated with suicidal behavior, meaning that they are not, but they have the black box warning. The study was published, again, by the Harvard Data Science Review, and it's noted in the University of Chicago article in the show notes. And they obviously didn't have the potential for suicide risk. They analyzed, of these 922 drugs, more than 3,000 prescriptions in the database were looked at. This was from 2003 to 2014. They contained records for 148 million unique patients. And they looked at each drug, they compared it to the counted suicide attempts and the filled prescriptions. They found of these 10 drugs that statistically showed significance in suicide attempts, they were opioid painkillers, hydrocodone, barbiturates, Vicodin, alprazolam, which is Xanax, Valium, and prednisone. Of the 44 drugs that decreased suicide risk, including a large group of antidepressants with black box warnings, like fluoxetine, Lexapro, Neurontin, and anticonvulsants, such as seizure medications, and vitamins and folic acids were on the list as well. But so it is a huge longitudinal study that they looked at, and it is the opposite results of what we have for that. And again, people can review that, but it's very fulsome and thorough in the research that they did.
Once again, really do appreciate your visit and the coverage here today. We're speaking with Dr. Nikki Martinez, again, who has been working as an independent medical expert to assist the courts for the past decade and has also been an adjunct professor for nearly 14 years as she engages in domestic and international consulting for various individuals, groups, and organizations and offers individual and couples consulting via telemental health services. And she's joined us once again here on eHealth Radio's Health News and Mental Health Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, also, Dr. Martinez, you note that a major problem is the parents, guardians, and providers, they don't always realize that a teen is suicidal, and so they blame the medication when no one is asking the questions and having the conversation.
Yes, that's a significant problem as well, and it's really parents and providers, and it's the point that it's a discomfort, you know, with asking it. The providers, it can be that this individual has been their pediatrician or PCP for years, and so they really are just uncomfortable asking that question. And so again, there's the pre-existing thoughts, and you know, they've known this child since they've been born, and so they don't want to ask the question. The parents are just convinced that their child is depressed, but they're not that depressed, and it's an uncomfortable question to ask. And the truth is that just a few years ago, there was a study published by the Journal of Pediatrics, and the researchers found they talked to 5,000 adolescents between the ages of 11 and 17. And of those they had interviewed and asked, over half of over half of the children that they asked had thought of killing themselves, or a thought of death or dying. Of those, half of the parents of those adolescents were completely unaware of it. Three quarters of the parents who thought about that had no idea that their child had ever thought about death. In terms of disconnects for research for mental health problems, in 2021, there was a youth risk behavioral survey. It noted that 42% of high school students reported persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness, 22% seriously considered suicide, and 10% had attempted it. The numbers were higher for girls and youth who identify as LGBTQ+. Almost 60% of girls experienced persistent sadness and hopelessness, 30% considered attempting suicide, and 13% had attempted it. 70% of them had persistent sadness and hopelessness, and 45% seriously considered suicide, and 22% attempted it. And many factors contributed to this, but stress and isolation caused by the pandemic has played a major role. While teens are now back in school mostly, re-entry has been really difficult for many. Social media plays a huge role, inviting in a lot of comparisons, reinforcing negative thoughts and ideas, doom scrolling. Bullying, of course, is a huge problem, both in person and online. Up to 16% of high school students have reported being bullied electronically or in person, and that's 20% of girls have reported that, and 27% of those who identify as LGBTQ+ have reported that as well.
Really do appreciate your coverage on this, and you've certainly done your homework and pre your expertise. We really do appreciate all the details shared here today on today's topic. Now, lastly, based on your experience and reports from individuals you've worked with over the years, what conversations could providers and guardians be having with children and teens to help make sure these incidents are significantly reduced?
Well, two things. One, they really have to be having that uncomfortable conversation and ask the question. And I know nobody wants to, but really, and there's going to be initial denial, because that's the normal knee-jerk reaction, because neither party on either side wants to have that conversation. It's uncomfortable, but they have to ask the question, and they have to keep asking the question, especially if they start to see some of those signs and symptoms that I talked about at the start of this interview. They cannot skip over it. They can't assume that it's not going on, and they can't avoid it, because suicide and suicidality and thoughts of it are on the rise, and it's an epidemic. Also, providers have to make sure that they are not explaining this the opposite way. They cannot be explaining and saying the medication is causing the thoughts. They have to be explaining that when you start the medication for this window of time, you have to keep a close eye on them, because it will increase the thoughts that pre-exist. They also can't just start them on it. They have to have a thorough evaluation for other coexisting conditions that can be triggered to make sure and rule them out. If an adult was suspected of having a severe neurological disorder, they would give them a thorough evaluation and send them for a whole round of tests before they make sure they didn't have some other organic health issue before they would diagnose them with something. You don't want to start a child on a medication before you rule out that they don't have another co-occurring issue that can be triggered, because it literally can be life or death. So you want to be thorough and make sure that you have all of the information, and so that you prescribe the right medication.
Dr. Martinez, always great to have you. Thanks so much for what you do. And I'm sure listeners want to know where they could get more information on yourself and tap into your resources and services. Where's the best place to do so?
They can reach me on my website at drnikkimartinez.com. That's drnikkimartinez.com. They can reach me at LinkedIn and at the regular LinkedIn address, and that's NIKKI-Martinez. Martinez, M-A-R-T-A-I-N-E-Z. And then I would love if they would check out mine or any of the other authors at everydaypower.com.
And of course, listeners, it goes without saying you can find all these links pertaining to this interview within the show notes of this broadcast. Dr. Martinez, thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you're more than welcome. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Nikki Martinez, again, who has been working as an independent medical expert to assist the courts for the past decade and has also been an adjunct professor for nearly 14 years. She engages in domestic and international consulting for various individuals, groups, and organizations and offers individual and couples consulting via telemental health services. And for all the details and for contact, visit drnikkimartinez.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.